Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Dead and Gone in Wyoming is sponsored by the Hampton Inn and Suites in Riverton, Wyoming. Riverton is a gateway to adventure located right in the middle of the Cowboy States. It's a hub for experiencing the best the state has to offer. Attractions like Yellowstone and the Tetons, world-class skiing, mountain recreation, casino gaming, cultural and historical sites on and around the Wind River Reservation. Riverton has the best access to one of the best states in the country, and when you're visiting, you'll want to stay at the best. The Hampton Inn and Suites is conveniently located, serves a free hot breakfast, too. Make plans to stay at the Hampton Inn and Suites in Riverton, Wyoming, and feel the Hamptonality. Welcome back to Dead and Gone in Wyoming, a monthly podcast telling the stories of this remarkable state's most enduring murders and disappearances. I'm Scott Fuller, and this episode of the podcast is going to be terrible to listen to. It contains accounts of harm to a child, and listener discretion is advised. Difficult as this story is to tell, when I become aware of something like this, I feel a moral imperative of sorts to explore it and try to understand it. And try to learn from it. We like to ignore the things in the human nature which are so terrible and difficult to understand that the easiest thing to do is ignore that they happen at all. And if you too would like to ignore this story that I'm about to tell, I completely understand. But it happened. And rare as the specific circumstances in this episode are, I find it within myself more respectful to the victims of crimes and more helpful to potential future victims of crimes like this to tell the story and to get it right. Crimes like this happen anywhere and everywhere in the country. This one just happened to take place in Wyoming. If you've ever lived in Cody, Wyoming, odds are you've been to the exact place where that town changed forever. It was an earthquake, or it may as well have been, especially if you raised kids who are now college-aged there and then. 1501 Stampede Avenue in Cody, Wyoming. That place exists in practically every town in America. That building is civilization's oldest pillar. Every town in America, big enough to call itself a town, has a church and a bar and a library. And the safest of those three, one might say, is the last. 1501 Stampede houses the local public library in Cody, not to mention the County Child Services Center. And so there are any number of reasons for children and adults to be present together at any given time, any number of benign reasons to see a few children talking to a man in an SUV outside, any number of reasons to witness one of those children get inside the vehicle even as the others stay behind. In a world where the things that happened in Cody over a few hours on that day cannot be undone, the story I tell you on this episode has a more hopeful outcome than most, but it is in no way a happy story. Jesse Speer was born and raised in Kansas City and would go to Lawrence for college, attending the University of Kansas Graphic Design Program. There is an art to telling stories as I do, but I am not an artistic person. Jesse Speer certainly was. He found his calling as a photographer, eventually evolving into black and white landscapes. He only used color when he had to. And there's only so much of that landscape photography to be had in Kansas, and so after graduation, he and his camera moved even further west, where the Rocky Mountains became his playground. Yellowstone, of course, the Tetons, Rocky Mountain National, all the usual spots. But Jesse Speer also captured what far fewer do. Colorado's collegiate peaks, the San Juans. Beautiful scenes, absolutely stunning from rural Washington and Montana. some of these places you've seen in photographs dozens of times or more. But Jesse Speer was able to capture even those most touristy of the Rocky Mountain spots in a truly unique light. Some of those places I've been to myself, and some of the images that Jesse Speer was able to capture on camera are stunning, because I know what was required for him to photograph those scenes, to say nothing of the photography itself. For example, there's one photo of Jesse Speer's of the backside of Longs at sunset. Longs Peak in Colorado is above 14,000 feet in elevation. It's a 12-hour hike round trip. When I climbed Longs Peak many years ago, I started in the dark at 4 o'clock in the morning in order to be off the top of the mountain by noon when the daily afternoon thunderstorms start to roll in. But there is Jesse Speer at sunset on Longs Peak. I wouldn't even consider being so far above timberline at that hour, or even close to that hour. Most hikers wouldn't, regardless of how perfect the weather forecast looked. All this to say that Jesse Speer was very talented and a very driven photographer, which is saying something in a field that is overwhelmed by the ambitious amateur. All this to say that we don't know anybody, really. We think we do, but all we actually have about people, even the people who are closest to us, are our assumptions. Correct assumptions sometimes, but not every time. Jesse Speer was outgoing and polite. He'd been married, had two children. Any eccentricities that he ever exhibited likely would have been written off to him being an artistic type. And in a place like Wyoming, where Jesse Speer spent plenty of time, even those eccentricities wouldn't be thought about twice as he ran his shop in Du Bois, Wyoming. Let's just say there are no shortage of square pegs in a town famous for its military vehicle museum and jackalope-themed gas station. Nothing wrong with either, by the way. I'm a bit of a square peg myself, which is a little of what's bothering me with this story, because the truth is you really can't tell. Jesse Speer, exactly 10 years ago today, on October 8, 2012, pulled his car up to the county library in Cody and told a small group of 10 to 12-year-old children that he'd lost his puppy and he needed one of them to come help him find it. One 11-year-old girl initially agreed to do so. I won't be using her name in this episode. Jesse Speer drove away with a girl, and the town of Cody, Wyoming hasn't been the same since. Jesse Speer, in addition to being a very talented photographer, was otherwise apparently normal, if not a little bit pretentious. His stated interests included his self-proclaimed faith. He was a fan of the Lord of the Rings series and Johnny Depp. Other interests included hiking, the open road, coffee, and small towns. On September 28, 2012, Speer announced his upcoming vacation plans to the world on Facebook. "I'm hitting the road," he wrote. "This is my last photo post for a few weeks. Vacation time is upon me, and I'm taking to the road with camera in hand and no particular destination in mind. See you soon, and thank you for your continued support of my work." 11 days later, on October 8, 2012, Jesse Speer drove to the Park County Public Library. At 3:55 p.m., he approached the young girls, presenting the ruse about the dog. One of those girls initially said she would help him find his lost dog, but apparently thought better of it and immediately after said no. It was at that point that Speer revealed a handgun, pointed the gun at the 11-year-old girl's chest, and instructed that the girl get in the passenger seat of his car. The other girls naturally were terrified as he and the girl drove away. Jesse Speer had to have known that his actions would immediately be conveyed by the other two girls that he'd left behind and who had just witnessed an abduction at gunpoint, probably to the nearest adult they could find, and then certainly the police would be notified. The girls would have seen him, obviously, and be able to provide his description and a description of his vehicle. Were the girls observant enough, they might even be able to recall a part of his license plate. This is a terrifyingly reckless insight into the man's mind in that moment, in hindsight. It didn't seem that Jesse Speer possessed any fear of getting caught. A predator acting seemingly without any fear of consequence whatsoever. And of course, after some time went by, the other girls did call 911.
"She was last seen wearing a pink shirt, black capri pants, and wearing brown glasses. She was last seen getting into a white, newer model Toyota four-door, driven by a white male, 55 to 65 years of age, 6 feet tall, weighing 185 pounds to 200 pounds, with white hair and a white beard or goatee. If you see this vehicle, please call 911 or the Cody Police Department at 307-527-8700.
Jesse Paul Spear was 41 years old at the time, not 50 to 60, but the Amber Alert you just heard was sent out to the entire state of Wyoming, and it did contain an accurate, although generic, vehicle description. Amber Alerts are issued whenever law enforcement believes an abduction of a child has occurred and that the child is in danger. They typically can only be issued, though, when an abduction is witnessed or caught on camera, because there has to be enough information contained in that alert to help actually locate the child. A child simply missing isn't enough for an Amber Alert, because that information alone wouldn't help locate the child. But a vehicle and a suspect description, as in this case, was more than enough. Amber Alerts have successfully located over 1,000 children since the inception of the technology after the abduction of Amber Renee Hagerman in 1996, which led to the system. This case would not be one of those, though. At 8 o'clock that same night, about 4 hours after the girl had been taken from the Park County Library in Cody, two men returning from a hunting trip saw what they first believed to be a woman running down the dirt road in the middle of nowhere. Driving closer, the men could see she was wearing black capri pants and a sweatshirt, and that she wasn't a woman at all, but a young child. The child told the men that she had been kidnapped, and one of the men offered his cell phone so she could call her mother. The men listened to the girl's side of that phone conversation in absolute horror as she described being taken by a man at the library, driven to a church parking lot where she saw photos of other underage girls, naked, and that she had been sexually assaulted by the man before he drove her out of town and dropped her off on the side of the road. The same night, a forensic examination of the victim was done. Officials noted ligature marks on the 11-year-old's wrists and ankles, and she confirmed she had been restrained by her abductor. She recounted what had happened earlier that day. The victim and her brother, along with her brother's friend, had walked to the library at about noon. Later, she met up with two other girls and crossed the street to play next to a pond, perhaps far enough from the building itself to make Jesse Spear feel more comfortable with what he was about to do. Spear might have seen the dog, a black puppy, running around the area. The victim had seen it as well. Spear asked the girls if they had seen that black puppy. It was his, he said, and it had run away. The girls had seen the dog, and the 11-year-old girl told him so. He asked if she would help him look for it. Both of the other girls declined, but she said okay, and then immediately changed her mind. Spear produced the handgun, forcing her inside. As he began driving away from the area, the girl asked that he turn around, as it didn't appear they seemed to be looking for a dog. Spear produced black rope at this point, which he used to tie her hands behind her back. He instructed her to keep her head down as they drove, but she refused, to which Spear responded by striking her in the head with a gun. This 11-year-old girl knew what was going to happen to her, and she told him as much. She said, "I know you're going to rape me." Spear replied that he had no intention of hurting her, but soon after pulled off to the side of the road where he committed the sexual assault. She recalled to police seeing stacks of nude photographs of other underage girls during the rape. And afterwards, Spear placed a cloth bag over her head. They drove further. She did her best to take note of her surroundings, but she could no longer see. The road they traveled on then was unpaved and bumpy, and at some point, Spear stopped the car and instructed her to keep her eyes closed and walk down the road and count to 50. She did, no doubt fearing that she would be shot at any moment. But she wasn't. And when she opened her eyes, there was no sign of the man or his white vehicle, just trees and desert, and she began to run. The hunters who found the girl had seen Jesse Spear too, it turned out. They saw his white vehicle with Montana license plates and took notice of it because of the abrupt turn it had made on the road when their own vehicle came into view. The vehicle they saw did not have any kind of storage device on the roof as the vehicle described in the abduction had. Spear, it turned out, had removed it and abandoned it on the side of the road. 4 days after the abduction in Cody, authorities went public with their interest in a 2004 or 2005 white four-door Toyota 4Runner with a silver over black cargo box on the roof, a Thule, it turned out, that was found by a commercial logger 3 days later. This confirmed the original vehicle description, more or less, and investigators began to compile available surveillance video from nearby locations around Cody about the time of the abduction. A man in a video from a gas station appeared to be similar to the suspect description, as was the vehicle he was driving, but the image didn't reveal any license plate or other specifically identifying information. The gas station surveillance camera proved most useful, though. 3 hours before the abduction, they saw the man, they saw the similar vehicle, they saw the man fill his car with gas and then walk into a local liquor store. The next day, the FBI was able to locate surveillance video from an entrance at Yellowstone National Park the day before the abduction. They saw the same man, they saw the same vehicle, and this time his Montana license plates were easy to read. A database search revealed Jesse Spears' name and photograph, and just like that, law enforcement knew exactly which man they were hunting. Jesse Paul Spear had lived in numerous Rocky Mountain states and had very recently moved to Manhattan, Montana.
October 13th, Saturday, middle of the day, we were contacted and asked for assistance by the FBI, as well as from Cody Police. That assistance was asked for within a number of areas of Galveston County, to include the city of Bozeman, Manhattan, city of Belgrade, and the county as a whole, primarily to locate Mr. Jesse Paul Spear.
Prior to that day, Jesse Spear had never been arrested for anything. A judge set a $2 million cash bail, a fee that Spear, being represented by a public defender, had no hope of meeting. After Spear was arrested that Saturday, just 5 days after the abduction and assault, first thing Monday morning, his ex-wife petitioned for sole custody of the couple's then 7-year-old and 4-year-old children. Spear had been spending every other weekend with the kids, including the weekend just before his arrest. She wrote in her petition that her husband had changed over the previous months, that his personality had changed, and that she no longer felt that she and her children were safe in his presence. But Jesse Spear would never be free. In November 2013, following a guilty plea, Jesse Paul Spear was sentenced to life in prison on kidnapping, rape, and gun charges. Jesse Spear's arrest immediately drew the attention of regional law enforcement who were working on cases in other states as well. Jessica Ridgway was 10 years old when she was reported missing from Westminster, Colorado, on October 5, 2012, 3 days before the Wyoming abduction. It was 2 days after that that Jessica Ridgway's dismembered body was found in Arvada. Jessica was reported missing when she failed to return home from school, but it turned out she had never made it to class that day. She had been abducted walking to school, the same elementary school it would turn out that her killer once attended. But that person was not Jesse Spear. A 17-year-old community college student named Austin Sigg abducted Jessica in a manner similar to that Cody abduction. Her wrists and ankles were bound, and she was transported to a different location. Ultimately, Sig confessed to forcing Jessica to change out of her clothes and into a pair of shorts and a t-shirt before he strangled her, dismembered her body, and hid her limbs and head in a crawl space before dumping her torso in a park in Arvada. Sig was said to have a keen interest in mortuary science and planned to potentially pursue that as a career one day. 17 years old. It took several weeks at least for the FBI in Denver to definitively unlink Jessica Ridgway's murder to the Cody abduction. It isn't known how many other victims, if any, Jesse Spear had prior to that day in October 2012, nor obviously is it clear to what extent that his criminal behavior would have escalated, even beyond abducting and raping young girls. It is the nightmare of every parent, this story. Of the 75 million children in the U.S., about 400,000 are reported missing each year. That's a shocking number, but it needs context. The vast majority of those children are found safe and soon after running away or becoming lost. Among those children who are actually abducted, about 90% of the time, a parent is responsible. A minute percentage of children in America are abducted by strangers, as happened in this case. Stranger abductions account for 0.0006% of all children reported missing every year. And nobody, if quizzed, could be expected to be close to accurate on that stat, because stranger abductions of children make the news, and always have. This country's first prominent child abduction was a kidnapping for ransom that occurred 148 years ago, when on July 1st, 1874, 4-year-old Charlie Ross went missing in Pennsylvania. Since then, the Lindbergh Baby, Jacob Wetterling, J.C. Dugard, Johnny Gosch, Polly Klass, and most recently Jamie Kloss, and many others have kept this most improbable, almost impossible of crimes front and center in the American psyche. Such a thing for a young child to be taken by a stranger is statistically so improbable, irrationally speaking, isn't even something that American parents should be concerned about. But parents have, and always will, that darkest fear in the back of their minds of the most improbable and terrifying of days. Of the 75 million children in America, 200 or 300 every year are abducted by strangers. 200 or 300 compared to 75 million. But that does, of course, mean it happens almost every day. Sources for this episode include reporting from the Bozeman Daily Chronicle, KURL-TV, and Westword Magazine, with reporting by Michael Roberts, along with court documents. And thank you for listening to A Difficult Subject. Apart from the extremely rare abduction of a child by a stranger, there is a larger issue of awareness of child sexual assault that is far more prominent, and one I'd like to draw attention to through the nation's largest anti-sexual violence organization, RAIN, R-A-I-N-N. RAIN created and operates the National Sexual Assault Hotline in partnership with over 1,000 local sexual assault service providers across the country. Evident in the story we told today is the importance of having conversations about sexual assault with your child as part of safety conversations that you're already having, knowing when to speak up, how to take care of your friends, and listening to your gut. Child sexual assault is obviously a challenging topic to discuss with your children. You can find more information about how to have that conversation and about safety support for parents at RAINN.org. That's all the time we have for this month. For everyone at County 10, I'm Scott Fuller, already looking forward to bringing you the next episode of Dead and Gone in Wyoming.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.